everyone. I want to welcome you to the webinar today that we will be discussing a new guidelines on screening for lung cancer. And I have Dr. Carrie McGovern with me today. She's with Mission Medical Oncology, and I will have her introduce herself and tell you a little bit more about what she does.
Hi, everyone. I'm Carrie McGovern, as previously said. I'm one of the medical oncologists at Mission. My area of expertise and what I've been brought in to do has been to focus on lung cancer. So the talking today about the change in the guidelines and how, what we're doing and how we're taking those guidelines for our patients is very appropriate and what I'm happy to talk about. I'm from New York originally. I've been here for over a year and a half in Western North Carolina, and it's been wonderful. So I'm happy to kind of dive in and see how we can help our Western North Carolinians.
So Dr. McGovern, tell me just a little bit about what has changed in lung cancer screening and what you're doing to adapt to that.
So within the past year, the U.S. Preventive Task Force Service, which does a lot of guidelines for cancer screening and lung cancer screening being one of them, they have broadened the guidelines to include more individuals that are eligible to be screened for lung cancer. And we talk about screening, we try to find those patients that are a bit are at a higher risk than the general population, and we try to focus our screening efforts on them. And so within the last year, they've recommended that individuals between the age of 50 and 80 who are currently smoking or have quit within the last 15 years may be eligible for screening. They also have to meet a certain amount of smoking over their lifetime, which we call pack years. So recommended pack year is what we call 20 pack years. So for an individual who smoked one pack a day for 20 years, they have a 20 pack year history. Someone who smoked, say, two packs per day, but just for 10 years, they also qualify. So a little math involved, but with the consultation and discussion with your physician, can really know whether you one would qualify and would benefit from this type of screening.
Can you tell me a little bit about why we use low-dose CT scan for screening?
So over the last years, there have been studies to try and look at multiple different types of scans, images to screen for lung cancer. They've looked at things from basic chest x-rays to more advanced CAT scans. And through very large trials, looking at thousands of individuals over years, they found that what we call a low-dose CAT scan is both the most effective way to detect lung cancer in terms of it is sensitive enough to find lung cancer, especially when it's small, but it is not overdoing it in terms of risks, the process of going through a CAT scan. We refer to it commonly as a low-dose CAT scan because it is much less radiation than what a standard CAT scan of the lungs is given. It also has the benefit that there's no needles, there's no medication given. The actual scan itself takes about 10 seconds from start to finish to complete. So it is it's an ideal screening test in terms of being effective, straightforward, and relatively easy for patients to tolerate to give us the most information out of one straightforward test.
Dr. McGovern, remember the U.S. Preventative Service Task Force first published guidelines for lung cancer screening? I think it might have only been 3 or 4 years ago, and at that time, the PAC year history guideline was around screening individuals 55 to 80, and then with a 30 PAC year history. And just this past year, they updated the guidelines to patients 50 to 80 with a 20 PAC year history. So that is a pretty rapid turnaround in changing guidelines. And I'm just wondering if you have any information about what information has been driving that change, and how that informs us in our approach to screening.
So the changes seem to be twofold, I would say. Part of it reflects what we consider high risk and what the patterns are in terms of patient smoking history. So over the people that smoke now, how they smoke is much different today than it was years ago when a lot of the studies started. So as they follow these patients over time, and as we see how Americans change their habits, they have decided to change the guidelines to kind of reflect those new changes. The term high risk can change based on what is, I guess, considered high risk activities or habits as they change over time. So in order to catch a wide enough net to catch all the high risk individuals without capturing too many that we may consider low risk, but not be too narrowed and miss some individuals, they modified these guidelines. And I think what's interesting is they have increased the age to 80. It was younger than that prior, and I think that reflects that as healthcare and as medicine gets better overall, patients are living longer. For the most part, they may be living more healthy longer. And so not excluding older patients just because of their age is something that's taken into consideration, and they should have the benefit of screening, especially if they're healthy enough to receive any type of treatment if their screening test turned out to be positive.
Right. Well, as you know, when guidelines change, sometimes there's a delay before payers acknowledge that there's a change in guidelines. So I'm imagining and have experienced some barriers to getting screening, not just related to insurance, but also for patients who may not have funding resources for screening or for treatment for that matter. So what is happening locally to help support screening processes related to and those barriers related to affordability of care?
So you're absolutely right. I find that the insurance coverage, those actual policies, definitely lag behind the guidelines, and it can lag for months or longer. So it's really important to kind of undertake this with the guidance of primary care, the lung doctors, to really make sure that all of those practical pieces are in place other than just saying, you qualify for the scan, let's order it. Here locally, there are a lot of things that are changing, and we're very mindful of the community and barriers, and the practical ones being very important ones like transportation, finances, and taking the responsibility of what happens after the patients get the scan. We need to make sure that we have those processes in place to then walk the patients through the next steps of whether it's more testing, different doctor's visits. It all needs to be really taken into consideration. So we're doing a lot of work at Mission with the Dogwood Trust and also with Project Access in the region to kind of address these and to have those kind of resources in place, especially in the financial end, in the form of grants to try and have that resource there for patients as they go through this process. And I think the first part of it is key prior to potential diagnosis. Once patients within Mission have a diagnosis of lung cancer, it actually, the process becomes, in a way, a bit more streamlined and supported. We have our nurse navigators that are involved from diagnosis. They help provide resources, even further access, grants, support, transportation to get our patients to their surgeon, their medicine doctor, their radiation doctor, to their scans, to any kind of procedures they may need. So what our focus is and what we're trying to do step by step is to firm up that process from initial screening scan to what happens next, and to make sure that they don't fall through the cracks. And the lung cancer screening program at Mission, which has been around for years, is extremely well established, and they actually have their own navigators that walk patients through, follow them up if there's any recommendations for a scan in a year or something else. They keep track of them and make sure that we take care of whatever's recommended and needed for them next. So that's been a very long standing, well established program for the community here, and it's just how can we support them and add any more resources that they may need as well.
So from the primary care perspective, when a patient's referred for their initial screen, that is then navigated regardless of whether they have a positive screen, and they will outreach will occur, or does the primary care provider need to track the need for their annual screen to make sure those orders are in, or is that done through the navigators?
That's actually done through the lung screening program at Mission. So there are specific navigators part of the screening program that do keep track of when patients are due for scans, will send reminders, reach out to patients to help them make that follow-up. So the burden is not all on whatever provider orders the initial scan. The screening, lung cancer screening program itself has its own mechanisms to do that. What we're also trying to do more recently is we're doing this return to screening program through the American Cancer Society. It's a national program that we elected to join, to be a part of here. And the goal is to those patients that have had their first screen, but with COVID and all of the changes in the last 2 years, for whatever reason may have declined or forgot or just didn't feel comfortable following up, we're actually working to catch those patients and bring them back into the program through this return to screening quality improvement project. So we keep patients on track and keep them kind of within the screening purview of things, and not have them come back in a year or two. And unfortunately, their lung cancer is now advanced stage, where we could have maybe still caught things early through the screening program.
So because the age range is now 80, does that mean somebody could potentially be screened from the age 50 to 80 every year? Or is there a period of time where you decide screening is no longer indicated, or potentially if they are no longer smoking for 15 years, I think is the guideline. How mm-hmm. how do you determine if somebody's no longer needing screening?
So a few different factors go into that. Part of it is after I would say several, and by several, I usually ask the radiologist to help out. You know, if they've had normal, no suspicious CAT scans for at least 3 to 5 years, then I think the conversation between the patient, the doctor, and even having radiology weigh in terms of what is the benefit of continuing to screen versus kind of taking a step back from the screening program. Part of it does take into account, as you mentioned, if they do quit smoking and now they're 65, 66, they haven't smoked since the age of 50, I think it's very reasonable to say we can press pause on the lung cancer screening. Other things to think of is if a patient's health for any other reason over those years changes in a way where maybe they have more active medical issues, maybe too sick to want treatment if the screening found something, then you say, is the screening still beneficial? So I think what I'm circling back to is it's very much an individual discussion between patient and physician, and kind of a discussion of, does the benefit of continuing to screen, knowing that there are pluses and minuses of screening, are those benefits still there for the patient, or is the benefit starting to lessen and maybe it's not an important aspect of their medical care moving forward.
So if a patient's engaged in the screening program and say they've had 3 to 5 years of screening, will there be a recommendation that comes, you know, from the navigator around that additional conversation? I'm assuming primary care providers are seeing all these patients once a year and having some conversation around the need for ongoing screening. I'm just wondering what comes to the primary care provider from the team there who is mm-hmm. managing and navigating the screening program.
More often than not, the recommendations will come from the radiologists, either directly to the provider. I have seen that as they report on the actual radiology results, they will make recommendations in terms of what they feel is appropriate in terms of continued screening versus, comment on whether continued screening or follow-up is necessary. Right. I think it would be... it would come from, or part of what would be recommended would come from the radiologist.
Yeah, I have another question too. So obviously the purpose of the cancer screening is to impact mortality and improve early diagnosis. And it's very important in lung cancer, obviously, because we haven't had another method to do that until now. But along with increasing screening comes the increased risk of false positive results, potential for unnecessary tests and unnecessary invasive procedures, and the downstream implications of overdiagnosis. Can you speak to how those issues are mitigated as a part of the cancer screening program?
Sure. So you're absolutely right. I mean, we talk about risks, benefits, and one of the risks is false positives, false negatives, and both are they're weighed very seriously in the initial conversation with the patient. And I think a lot of it has to do, I think the more counseling that goes into that first initial conversation in terms of why we would do screening for you, what the risks and the benefits are, what happens if this does come back positive, and the risk of a false positive is very important. And so setting the groundwork early is what we typically recommend. And then after the lung cancer screening CT, if there is something abnormal that needs to be followed up on, I think having that follow-up with particularly the lung doctors, the pulmonologists, I should say, is important to kind of have that discussion about this is what may need to happen. This is what the likelihood or the chance of this being something actual, the chance of this actually being a cancer versus something else. We also have a mechanism in place where we have a weekly lung, we call it our multidisciplinary thoracic conference. So patients starting from abnormal scans, such as those that can be found within the lung cancer screening program, can be discussed on in a group of kind of widely varying expertise. So the radiologists, the pulmonologists, surgeons, radiation, medical oncologist, anyone who may need to be involved, the case can be presented there and discussed and kind of decided on as a group, what is the next best step? So it's not just an automatic reflexive, something's abnormal, we need to stick a needle in something or go through a big procedure. It's very much a rediscussion, risks, benefits, what we're worried about, to make sure that the patient understands what's going on and they have the information they need to make the decision in terms of moving forward with the testing, knowing that a false positive, that at the end of the day, going through this additional testing rules out cancer, and making sure that they're actively a part of the decision. Does that help answer?
Great. Great. That's good to know. Those discussions are happening. I mean, as you can imagine, in primary care, there's so many things that a primary care provider has to be thinking about when they're taking care of a patient. And, you know, many of these patients already have other chronic conditions or risk factors, and they have other screening needs. So the time to actually explain the process of screening, the implications, the pros and cons, you know, there's not a ton of time to do that. Do you have any resources that you recommend, or, you know, we'd love to share that on the MHP website if so, but is there a go-to website or a go-to app or something like that that could be helpful to primary care providers when they're having these conversations?
So I think the two most useful and kind of succinct resources that I use and that I like to refer to locally, so on the Mission Health website, there is, under the cancer care, there is a low-dose lung cancer screening program frequently asked questions section, and it really, it's quite thorough but straightforward in terms of why do we screen, is someone eligible, what is the actual process to make the referral. It explains how the scan is actually performed, talks about the risks, insurance coverage. So I find that quite useful and quite, it's a good starting place, because then for providers, it does give the information if there's any questions, how to place the referral and those kind of things. Because one of the barriers that we are working on is ordering the low-dose CAT scan for this screening is not the most streamlined process right now. So through the Return to Screening program, we are working on how to take away some of the, I guess, extra paperwork, faxing, to make it easier for primary cares in the midst of their extremely busy day to actually get the scan ordered. The ordering of the scan should not be the most time or the most time consuming part of the process. And then just circling back to resources for providers, the U.S. Preventative Task Force, their section on lung cancer screening, I find it's very thorough, a little bit more broad, and can give kind of the necessary background in terms of why, how effective this is, and that kind of stuff. So a good local resource through the Mission Health website, and then a more broader public health guidelines resource through the U.S. PTS.
Great. Yeah, that's so helpful. And what you say about ordering tests can be true as well. So I do know seeing patients at MAHEC that our standard referral order for the low-dose CT scan has embedded in it the kind of a phrase with mm-hmm. all the questions so that it can be done kind of as a part of the workflow. So that can be helpful if you're needing to build it into your EHR to have the necessary questions and built as part of the workflow in the EHR. And I think that's worked for us fine. So, and we're certainly open to any other ideas and happy to communicate to other practices in the network as you guys work on this process to make the ordering a little bit easier.
Yeah, I find especially the practices that aren't within our internal medical record system, they have a few more steps to go to get the order in. So we're trying to figure out how do we reduce the paperwork? Because no one, we all spend enough time doing paperwork a day in between seeing all of our patients. And so if we can make it a little bit easier, a little bit more streamlined, then it helps at the end of the day, patient, provider, and gets to the appropriate outcome.
Great. Do you have any good stories to tell from the great work of doing lung cancer screening?
So right now I've been seeing and I find very encouraging is that through our return to screening quality improvement project, we are tracking how many patients we're tracking how many patients were screened prior to the COVID era and then kind of where we are now through the rest of the year. And it's been really encouraging to see that we are at or above our prior screening thresholds, which has been nice because we've been working kind of on the provider end and somewhat directly to patients to kind of be a resource to encourage them to get screened, answer their questions and concerns in terms of, is it okay to return to screening? Am I going to be safe? And those kind of things. And we've been seeing that patients are coming back. To be honest, lung cancer can be a deadly condition. And if we can find cancer early when it can be cured and more easily treated, then that's what we need to do for our patients. And so seeing patients coming back into the fold and getting screened, even with all of these changes going on, is really reassuring. And I'm hoping that we'll see the benefit of it in the long term for all those individuals.
Great. Thank you so much. I don't know if there's anything else you want to share, but I really appreciate the work you're doing and taking the time to talk to us a little bit about this so we can share these updates with our practices.
I'm really happy to take the time. I find that lung cancer screening is probably one of the underutilized services. There's a lot of good support marketing for breast cancer screening, colon cancer screening, as there absolutely should be. But I find that this is kind of a an important need and a very appropriate one in Western North Carolina to focus and to bring into the spotlight. And it's in a way doing all this to get patients screened and find things early. So maybe at the end of the day, they actually don't need a doctor like me. They don't need a medical oncologist. They can find their cancer early, get the appropriate curative treatment, and continue to live their life. So I'm happy to be a part of it and embrace and be involved in Western North Carolina.
Well, thank you so much. We're so glad to have you join us, and look forward to talking more.
I appreciate your time. It was nice to talk today.
Thank you.